You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, patriots and jackbooted thugs alike. It is the hour of power again. It is your number one problem child as far as the statist and the big government officials are concerned. It is the TNT radio show, Thursday Night Truth, on the My View Matters radio network. As always, if you want to call in tonight, the call-in numbers are nationwide, 858-683-1326. And in the local area, in the Kentuckiana area, 502-805-0334. We've got a whole lot of stuff in the news tonight, so we'll just get right into our This Week in History segment. And before we do that, we'll even remind people that this is now day number 30 of your host held hostage by a horribly terrible suck-ass internet company called Insight or Time Warner, whatever they want to call themselves this week. Just to remind you, your humble host is on day number 30 of being held hostage by their suck-ass service. So, that being said, we go into today's date is Thursday, February the 7th, 2013. And we start out with this week in 1782, the state of South Carolina outlawed paper money. That was a good start. If we could have kept it that way, we would have been a lot better off. And then this week in 1789, just 7 years later, we had the first United States presidential election. That was this week in 1789, when presidential electors pledged to George Washington were elected throughout the nation. And in the six states that had a popular election, Federalist electors won by a 41-3 margin. And in Connecticut and Georgia, the legislature chose the electors. In the aforementioned South Carolina, the legislators were authorized to meet in Charlestown to make the choice. And the lopsided defeat of the Anti-Federalists led to the first round of intrigue politically in casting electoral votes. And what I mean by that is Alexander Hamilton, who had managed George Washington's campaign, realized that if electors in New England held back some votes from Washington, it was possible that John Adams could be elected president and Washington vice president. Alexander Hamilton then corresponded with associates in other states about this issue, and a plan was developed. Hamilton dispatched men to each state to lobby the electors to withhold a few votes from John Adams to ensure his second place finish. And Samuel B. Webb, who was Hamilton's surrogate in the state of Connecticut, did not even arrive on the scene until the date of the meeting of the electors. So the presidential electors met this week in 1789 to cast the electoral vote. Unlike elections today in the 21st century, the electors included a large number of the leading political leaders and thinkers of the day. The results of the election were announced immediately in local newspapers. A Massachusetts paper wrote that electors, quote, gave in their votes unanimously for His Excellency George Washington, Esquire, and the Honorable John Adams, Esquire, as President and Vice President of the United States. This report suggests that although the electors were supposed to be casting two votes for President, that they in fact cast their first vote for President and the second for Vice President. So, at that point, we had the joint session of Congress. The messengers left their various states, presented their certificate of vote to be read by the first Congress. And Adams went on to be sworn in as vice president, and Washington sworn in as president. That's going back to this week in 1789. Moving forward, up to 1861, mentioning elections, it was on this week in 1861 that Jefferson Davis, the Honorable Jefferson Davis, was elected President of the Confederate States. And moving way up to 1972, this week in 1972, President Richard Milhouse Nixon signed Executive Order 11647. And go look this up. Don't believe me for it. Go look up the damn story if you think I'm telling you some conspiracy theory. Go look it up. But Nixon signed Executive Order 11647 41 years ago this week, which divided the United States into 10 federal regions. And the nation was divided into 10 administrative regions, which also established the Federal Regional Council for the newly designed 10 regions. Now, why in the world did Richard Nixon redefine the United States? He did so because the United Nations had passed a resolution saying the United States must organize into 10 regions. Can you name your regional directors? Of course not. Do you know who these councils are? Or if they were not elected, do you know where their office buildings are? No, you don't know anything because they were not elected, nor are they even mentioned on your televisions. Your regional councilmen are quote-unquote appointees. Can you tell me who appointed them to regional power? Bet you can't. And the reorganizing of our former nation achieved, you know, nothing certainly suggests that government as we knew it changed a long time ago. With all this information in hand, ask yourself, what would happen in the event of a real national crisis? See, I'm seeing all these reports, even the Drudge Report. Give them credit where credit is due, but even the Drudge Report's talking about this huge snowstorm that's coming to New England. So what if we had a nationwide epidemic or crisis? What powers do your states hold? Or for that matter, what power do your counties or local governments hold? Especially since most of them are bankrupt and they have regional managers. You see, if you go back to 1964, the Ford Foundation funded an outfit called the Center for the Study of Democratic Institutions. Sounds official and democratic, right? No. This was a Ford Foundation-funded outfit that was drafted to write a new constitution in 1964. And after 40 drafts, a staff of over 100 people, mind you, a $25 million project, think about what that'd be worth today. Let's therefore assume that these foundations were very serious about their investments. Why would they spend that much resource, man hours, and finances if they weren't serious about their investment? And guess what? Mr. Nelson Rockefeller, in 1976, was the president of the Senate. And he had introduced HCR 28, House Resolution 28, which called for an unlimited constitutional convention. That would be the perfect tool whereby to dissolve our current constitution and put the brand new written constitution into power without any oversight or public knowledge. But guess what? It didn't go over too well for Mr. Nelson Rockefeller, did it? Oh yeah, Nixon fell and Rockefeller fell. So we were saved by that, by Watergate. Was that a good thing in disguise? Dialectically speaking, they've had their answer of choice in the wings for decades. It's called dissolving state, county, and local powers for centralized power. Gosh, it's the United Nations mandate for one world government and regionalization for the United States, as commanded back in the 1960s. Do tell, folks. Do tell. Again, you're listening to the Thursday Night Truth Show, TNT Radio, on the My View Matters radio network. And I said earlier at the top of the show, there's all kinds of news out there. And I guess we'll start with some local news. We'll go from the local up to the national. Sometimes there's good news. I saw a very good local story. And you would have to be here in the Louisville, Kentucky area or the surrounding suburbs to really appreciate the geographical location here. But I think all of our listeners can appreciate the application thereof. And that is a story that came out of the newspaper this week here in Louisville. The city of Hillview, which is just a little bit south east of Louisville in an adjoining county of Bullock County, the city of Hillview recently voted 5-1 to remove political affiliation from their local ballots and forego primary elections. This will affect the city council and mayoral races in the city of Hillview. Hillview thus becomes the 7th of Bullock's 8 cities to go nonpartisan. This is that county, like I said, just to the southeast of Jefferson County here in Louisville, Kentucky Metro, where they actually get it. And now what will happen is without primaries, people will have a filing deadline all the way up until August to decide if they want to run for local office instead of January. See, before what happened a lot, as we happen to see in most major elections, most cities, most states, is you had to file very early, to run in an orderly primary against other Democrats or other Republicans. And if you want to run independent, you had to get tons and tons of signatures. Go talk to our friend Ken Moman, who does the Sunday night show here, Liberty Unbridled, the same network, the same time on Sunday nights. Ken Moman had to get tons and tons of signatures. But see, now, in this small town, yes, it's a small town, but it's a small start, too. In the small town of Hillview, Kentucky, they have a filing deadline that will now be August, and they won't have Democrat or Republican in front of their names. You see, statewide, believe it or not, there are 418 total cities in Kentucky. And Louisville is one of only 13 cities who still have partisan elections. Our good friends down in Lexington, their city elections are nonpartisan for their city council and their mayor. And now just south of us here in Bullock County, the said story talks about in Hillview, the change won't eliminate the occasional political discourse that accompanies partisan debate at every level, but the decision to go nonpartisan was prompted by other reasons. I'm reading the story here where Hillview council members believe that too often voters who didn't know anything about the candidates would simply vote by the R or the D next to their name, and therefore turn out of people drawn to a heated state or national election could affect local elections, regardless of how well they knew the candidates or didn't know the candidates. So you go way back, whether it was Tip O'Neill or whomever before him, said all politics is local. But anymore, they try to nationalize all these political elections. And it doesn't matter whether it's a Democrat or a Republican. If you have a state officer running, they'll try to connect them to a corrupt governor. If you have a federal election going on, they'll try to tie them to the senator or the president. And that's pretty much it in a nutshell. The parties have gotten so polarized, both Democrats and Republicans, that sometimes people will just vote for the party, not the person. Well, nearby Shepherdsville Mayor Scott Ellis, a Republican, agrees that trickle-down voting occurs locally, especially when the presidential election is either close or polarizing. And we had that this year. Many people got out and voted Republican because of Obama, he said. The political observers, folks, generally believe a voting bloc highly motivated against a national candidate will take it out on local candidates. Which isn't really fair if you think about it. The local candidates had no say over the issue at the top. But again, they tell you got to be a Democrat or Republican, or you do if you don't want to have to collect thousands and thousands of signatures. They have the major parties trying to challenge you to get you off the ballot. We saw that here with our good friend Ed Martin, who's also a co-host on this network on Monday and Tuesday nights. Ed Martin ran for Congress on a Libertarian ticket. And we saw our local Republican Party try to challenge him. We saw all of a sudden when Ed Martin was running, here comes this challenge. Here was this lawsuit filed in Jefferson County against our good friend Ed Martin. And what was the lawsuit about? Well, you had one Cordell Lawrence Jr. and one David Caldwell who signed on this lawsuit to try to get our good friend Edward Martin off the ballot. And that was when he ran for Congress on the Libertarian side. See, it's not bad enough that they wanted to make you collect all the signatures to keep you from actually campaigning because you're too busy collecting damn signatures. But after you've collected the signatures, then they'll try to challenge you on being on the ballot. They'll try to tell you that you had no right to be on the ballot. And I don't really understand that, because how can you tell somebody if they followed all your rules and they jumped through all your hoops, how can they tell you that you can't be on the ballot? Well, this is an interesting story. I know it's a little bit of inside baseball, but this goes back to 2.5 years. Well, like I said, our good friend Ed Martin was running a Libertarian ticket. And he had another kid named Michael Hansen running as an independent. And the suits by the local Republican Party claimed that they failed to properly file and they should be removed from the ballot, which was bullshit. Like Ed Martin said, it was just Chicago-style politics, more the same politics, the tactics that turned people off on politics. And, of course, then we learned a couple days later that when David Caldwell dropped out of the lawsuit, why is that? Oh, yeah, he was caught with indecent exposure charges and was arrested at the local library. So this is what they put us up to, folks. They want to tell you, oh, you got to get all these signatures to get on the ballot. You got to get all these signatures. And they line up all their neocons behind them. Or if it's on the Democrat side, all the socialists behind them. You got to have all these signatures to get on the ballot. Then you get the damn signatures. Then they still try to challenge you to get you off the ballot. Because they don't like competition. And we always knew the Democrat Party didn't like competition. But I thought Republicans were supposed to be like capitalism and free markets and supply and demand. You see, they believe they're kind of supply and demand when it comes to elections, is they'll supply the candidate, and don't you dare demand another candidate. And I'm saying all that to get back to the fact that we are very happy for Hillview, Kentucky, for voting to get rid of partisan elections. A very important statistic that I mentioned earlier is there are only 13 out of 418 cities in Kentucky that still have partisan elections. I've often said it'd be great if they just took the letters out in front of the names and let people have nonpartisan elections. So that is what went down in Hillview, Kentucky this week, where they made a smart move to try to get away from these partisan elections and want to get something more nonpartisan. So, on that note, we're all over the map a little bit tonight, and we apologize, folks, if it sounds like we're a little spacey, because there's a lot of news out there. But the other very important piece of news that we want to read from is our good friends over at the Bluegrass Institute put out an executive memo from Jim Waters about how the Bluegrass Institute is trying to make Kentucky government more transparent. And they believe, I'm a little bit more cynical, a little bit more skeptical, but the Bluegrass Institute says they believe they're already seeing the light of day in the beginning of the 2013 session of our Kentucky State General Assembly. And they say the reason they think it's making the light of day is because the House introduced House Bill 1, sponsored by Greg Stumbo, making Kentucky's special taxing districts open and accessible to public oversight by all citizens. Well, we know most people are not going to look into this stuff. They're too busy watching their stupid reality shows and playing on Facebook. They ain't got time for that. They look at that and say, nobody got time for that. But the crescendo of the Kentucky Citizen Auditor Initiative of Special Districts is a database designed to finally shine some light on the 1,200 different shadow governments, so-called because the state officials who run them have the power to assess fees and levy taxes on Kentuckians without having to be elected by anybody in the state. In addition, 40% of these ghost governments ignore their own legal obligation to submit budgets to county governments. Half of these ghost governments have revenues of over $750,000 per year, and they're not subjected to the audits required by law. So the lack of accountability, Jim Waters says, is not a nickels and dimes type of problem. Number one, the 1,268 special districts in every county in Kentucky combined spent more than $2.7 billion per year, more than a fourth of the annual state budget. At $1.3 billion, even the total reserves held by these ghost governments are more than twice those of our school districts. And in all but three of the 120 counties in Kentucky, taxpayers keep shelling out more and more to these unelected governments than they do to their own elected county governments. See, we've kind of given up on things at the federal level. I say that only nonchalantly and haphazardly because we're very glad that we have Senator Rand Paul in Washington. A lot of people wish they had our U.S. Senator Rand Paul, a lot of people who are liberty activists. And we're very happy just a few miles from me, we have a congressman named Thomas Massey, who's now up there. But overall, it seems like the national stage has been beyond help, so we try to focus on state issues. And even Democrat State Auditor Adam Edlin invited the Bluegrass Institute to partner with his state auditor's office to produce measures that would turn, quote, ghost governments into, quote, good governments. Again, I won't hold my breath on that, but the collaboration resulted in proposed legislation requiring these special districts to actually submit appropriate accounting and reporting information to the Department for Local Government, which then would supposedly streamline the process with a uniform system of transparency. If your eyes are glossing over yet, don't worry, mine are as well. But again, we have these 50 chapters of law, we have 1,000 different individual statutes, we have these bizarre classifications. No citizen can keep up with this. But groups like the Bluegrass Institute are working on their own timeline to try to force Frankfort into the light, to try to shine some light on the crap that they do with your tax dollars. Again, you're listening to the TNT radio show, Thursday Night Truth, on the My View Matters radio network. We will take our bottom of the hour break, and we'll come back. And again, if you hear us talking about something that interests you and you're listening on air right now, you can press the number one key to let us know that you want to get on the air. Anybody who's listening in the queue right now, and if you haven't called in or not listening on the air, you can call in, you can listen, or you can just call in and submit a question, 858-683-1326, or in the Kentuckiana area, 502-805-0334. You're listening to the TNT radio show, and we'll be back.
answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It is the TNT Radio Show, Thursday Night Truth, on the My View Matters Radio Network, the most likely, most listened to show on internet radio on Thursday nights. And you were just coming back in from the break with Knocking on Heaven's Door, the Axl Rose version. And we were talking about local issues before the break, and we were talking about transparency in local government and the ability, or at least a desire by one local government, to continue a trend statewide and nationwide to get away from partisan elections. So now, on the flip side here, we'll get into some national issues that honestly are very disturbing, and this is why we feel like we've totally lost control over the national government, because these issues are terrifying. These stories are very startling and very, very alarming. And the first one I'm talking about is a story that came out today that one Paul Joseph Watson put out about the Department of Homeland Security has purchased another 21.6 million rounds of ammunition. Let me read that again. DHS, Big Brother, Big Sister, your government, Homeland Security, has purchased 21.6 million more rounds of ammunition. They already had ordered 1.6 billion bullets over the course of the last 10 months alone. It kind of stokes concerns that the federal agency is preparing for civil unrest. And I'm reading from a solicitation posted yesterday on the FedBid website. The FedBid website, I mean, this is scary stuff, folks. I guess I need to post a copy of this in the chat room right now. This is what you miss when you listen to archives. I just posted in the chat room the link. I just posted in the chat room the link to the story about FedBid, where your federal government is purchasing another 21.5 million rounds of ammunition. And of course, they claim that they're required for the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center in Artesia, New Mexico. Why the hell would we need 21.5 million rounds of ammunition for a law enforcement training center? The solicitation asked for 10 million pistol cartridge, 40 caliber, 165 grain, jacketed hollow point bullets, and 10 million 9mm 115 grain jacketed hollow point bullets, 100 rounds of 100,000 each. The document also lists a requirement for 1.6 million pistol cartridge 9mm ball bullets, 40 rounds of 40,000 rounds each. An approximation of how many rounds of ammunition the Homeland Security has now secured over the last year stands at about 1.6 billion rounds of ammunition. I don't even know how to put that in perspective, folks. I can't even quantify that. You see, back in March of last year, ATK announced they would provide Homeland Security with a maximum of 450 million bullets. And in September last year, the federal agency purchased a further 200 million. To put that in some kind of perspective, during the height of active battle in Iraq, remember Iraqi and Storm and Desert Storm and Desert Shield and all this crap? And remember we went into Iraq even though they didn't attack us? I know, I won't go there tonight. But at the heyday of the apex of the fighting in Iraq, we were using, let me find my numbers here again, so I put this in perspective. We were using about 5.5 million rounds of ammunition a month. So if you extrapolate that number out, the Department of Homeland Security has purchased enough bullets over the last year to wage a full-scale war for 30 years. I think that could be the most important thing we say tonight. So I'm going to say this again. Please pay attention out there. If you're listening in the archives, you're listening live, your Department of Homeland Security has now purchased enough ammunition over the last year to wage a full-scale war for almost 30 years. That's why I said the national stories are depressing. I mean, such massive quantities of ammo have people thinking they're preparing for domestic unrest. Remember in 2011, Big Sis, Janet Napolitano, directed Immigration and Customs Enforcement to prepare for a mass influx of immigrants, quote-unquote, calling for a plan to deal with the shelter and processing of large numbers of people. The federal agency's primary concern is now centered around homegrown terrorism. But information produced and used by the DHS to train its personnel routinely equates conservative political ideology with domestic extremism. Remember, folks, they told us that people like Take Back Kentucky were terrorists. I mean, right in the hands of the Southern Poverty Law Center, if you are in a militia group, you're a terrorist. If you believe in something anti-government, you're a terrorist. If you have Ron Paul or Rand Paul or Thomas Massey bumper stickers on your car, you're a terrorist. This is how they feel. I'm just telling you what they say. I'm just relaying the information. It's a study funded by the Department of Homeland Security that was leaked last year characterized Americans who are suspicious of centralized authority and reverent of individual liberty, ooh, that's horrible, as being extreme terrorists. I'll read some of the list to you again. The report was taken by a study called Profiles of Perpetrators of Terrorism. It was put out by the National Consortium for the Study of Terrorism. And it said, the following characteristics are those of someone who may be a terrorist. Americans who believe their way of life is under attack. Americans who are fiercely nationalistic, I guess as opposed to universal or international in orientation, right? Americans who consider themselves anti-global. Americans who are suspicious of centralized federal authority. Americans who are reverent of individual liberty. People who believe in conspiracy theories that involve a threat to national sovereignty. And they go on and on. The list includes people who are opposed to abortion, people who seek to smite the enemies of God, blah, blah, blah. And then you had the infamous MIAC report. The infamous MIAC report put out by the Missouri Information Analysis Center. That one actually goes back to, that goes back 4 years. It's now been 4 years ago that the MIAC report came out. And they gave all these lists of people that they call terrorists because you're anti-government or you're nationalistic. Or you're a patriot. So that's where this all comes back to. So getting back to our lead story here. Our lead story here was talking about the 22 more million rounds of ammunition that Homeland Security has purchased. While Americans are being browbeaten with rhetoric about how they need to give up their semi-automatic weapons. That's the big thing now. Give up your semi-automatic weapons. And while they're being browbeaten about that rhetorically, the federal government is arming itself to the teeth with ammunition and guns. Folks, last September alone, the DHS purchased no less than 7,000 fully automatic weapons. I'll post this in the chat room as well. This is the personal defense weapon solicitation. I will put this in the chat room right now. This is the contract I just posted in the chat room that shows the Homeland Security Department buying 7,000 fully automatic weapons. Remember, not semi-automatics, the ones that tell you are dangerous, but fully automatic weapons. Because if you have a fully automatic weapon, I guess that makes you a government official. If you have a semi-automatic, I guess that makes you a homegrown terrorist. I don't know. But I do see our good friend Paul from Stop It is on the line. Paul, what say you?
Hi, Dale. I just now had an opportunity to tune in. As a non-gun owner, this concerns me that the government is arming themselves. You know, the government's already got a huge advantage over the rest of us anyway. They really don't need to increase that advantage unless, of course, they've got something in mind that is not good for the rest of us.
Well, if they find one guy out there, Paul, and they break into his home, it doesn't matter. You know, last night Ed Spriggs and I talked about how these police are just out to do what they want to do. And if they come in your home and they did find one or two semi-automatics, you're a terrorist. So why is it a common person who uses their hard-earned money and jumps through all the hoops to get a semi-automatic is a terrorist, but Homeland Security buys 7,000 fully automatic assault rifles last September?
Well, I think, Dale, the people who listen to your show, they know the reason for that. But just in case we got somebody listening to your show tonight that really doesn't understand what's going on, I think it is unbelievably naive to ignore the facts as we have learned them. And that is, this government is planning something, and it's not going to be good for most people who live here in this country. It's not going to be good. And to sit there and live in a state of denial is simply inviting all sorts of bad stuff to come visit you by the government. I think actually folks who are sitting here saying these are early warning signs, I think they're 100% on target. 100% on target.
Now, well, the gap between the governed, Paul, and those who govern us increasingly resembles the division between the ruled and the rulers. The gap is widening and the danger is increasing.
Well, people can ignore the early warning signs at their own peril. In the meantime, the rest of us are paying attention and planning accordingly. And planning accordingly does not necessarily mean that we're arming ourselves to the hilt, although that probably would be a decent idea. I think when the government decides to crack down on the masses, folks like you and I, our biggest threat will not be from the government. It will be from all of these people who say, oh, look, they prepared and we didn't.
Well, if you look at the numbers, Paul, too, you have about 30,000 law enforcement types. And, again, these are the only people who are hiring anymore. You got the prison industry hiring. You got the police force hiring. Military always taking more suckers, recruits. And you have 30,000 just law enforcement types. But compare that to 150 million armed Americans. They don't have a chance in hell if they're just going in one person against one person. They're incompetent. And again, they don't have a chance against 150 million armed Americans. Or do they, Paul?
They are. My cell phone service where I'm at is kind of bad.
I said,
you were freaking out.
I said, if you have 30,000 law enforcement types, Paul, and you have 150 million armed Americans, do the 30,000 law enforcement types, if they so decided, God help us, have a chance in a battle against 150 million armed Americans?
Well, I like our numbers, but the question is how many brave people are going to stand up and take it on.
That's the point.
That's my greatest concern.
Yeah, that's the point, because they talk about weaponry and they talk about ammunition. Hell, you can't buy – it's been about 10 years since you could even buy a 380 Winchester hollow point. There are plenty of 22 LR assault rifles out there. You can get 20 rounds of 380 hollow, but again – how long is that going to last? It's going to last about 2 minutes. And, a lot of people, that'll be their argument. Well, why do you want to arm yourself? You don't have a chance against the government. Well, so do you just lay down and die? You want to talk about people in a bunker. Is it better to be prepared in a bunker, or is it better just to be a sitting duck, Paul?
Well, I'm not in favor of those people who want to take that view. As long as they stay out of my way, I think we'll do fine. But, hey, look, let's think creatively on this situation.
Yep.
Okay? Our friend in the White House, Barack Hussein Obama, and his AG, Attorney General Eric Holder, managed to send a whole bunch of weapons across the border. Hey, we can just cross the border and purchase our weapons over there. And I'll bet we could find some friendly Canadians that would help us out, too. What do you think?
I think you may. There's a lot of veterans out there. There's a lot of former military people out there who are not going to go along with this. I can't find the document right now, but I know over on the AR-15 message board, there was a big, long list, a big letter signed by all these professional soldiers who said they were swearing to defend their oath, kind of like the Oath Keepers, and that they would not do harm to the American people. And that's what we need to hear. I just found it here. Over 1,000 Green Berets signed a letter last month supporting private citizens' Second Amendment rights. It was over at professionalsoldiers.com. It's a website where over 1,000 former Army Reserve, National Guard, and active duty Army Special Forces soldiers signed a letter saying that they defended our right to defend ourselves. So that makes me feel a little better.
Well, I think you hit upon a group of people whose patriotism runs a little deeper than average.
Uh-oh, cutting out on me, Paul. You're cutting out on me bad, Paul. I'm having problems hearing you. Let's see if we can get you in a better cell there. You there, Paul? You're cutting out bad, Paul. We can't hear you at all. Yeah, it's not making for good radio. We apologize, Paul. We're going to put you back in the queue. But again, it makes me feel a little bit better when I hear over 1,000 Green Berets have signed a letter supporting the Second Amendment. So that's important to me. It makes me think maybe all is not lost. I mean, I know people think that we're negative Nancy's here when we come to airwaves, and they think, oh, you're just doom and gloom, and you're being Dale Downer, and you're just talking about all this bad stuff about the government. Go look it up, folks. If you think I'm making the crap up, go do the research. I dare you. I don't want you to take my word for it. I want you to go look the stuff up and see if I'm not telling you the way things are. So again, we got a battle on for freedoms and liberties. We got a battle on between the administration and the people. Why else, if they weren't anticipating a big battle, would Homeland Security buy another 22 million rounds of ammunition? Think about that for a minute. And now this.
Oh, being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
And we're back. And folks, we've been talking tonight about a number of issues. We started out the show talking about local governments trying to get away from partisanship, because God knows, we've tried to tell you all so many times, it's not left versus right, it's not old versus young, it's not gay versus straight, it's not Christian versus Jew versus Muslim versus atheist, it's you versus the government. And that doesn't mean that we've declared war on the government. We want peace. We've always wanted a peaceful resistance. But we see what our government's doing in the way they're buying ammunition, and you have to be just a natural human being with a pulse to stop and wonder what's going on. That being said, I want to quickly revisit a story we talked about in the past, and that is how they're doing it right over in Iceland, one country that's doing it right. Who had to pay the bankers in Iceland's banking crash? Not the Icelanders. See, they didn't do the same thing as Spain and the U.S. and Ireland. Iceland decided taxpayers should not pay for the excesses of a banking industry that had grown disproportionately, but most importantly, that had ramped up the country's debt to a point where upwards of 90% of the debt written under the country's name was actually bank debt. You see, Iceland would compensate the British and Dutch, two of the countries that had bet more heavily in this fictitious financial product market, but the citizens said no twice through referendums. The citizens said hell no, and now 5 years after the collapse of its banking system, guess what? Iceland is back on their feet. Iceland is back on their feet. You see, after the bankruptcy, the governments in London and Amsterdam used their coffers to compensate customers of the Icelandic bank. Despite the support of the courts, Iceland ended up paying some of the money. But the bottom line is what I find interesting and consistent about the Icelandic experience is that independent auditing actually showed the actual national debt to be much lower than the international banking cartel had on the books. This is like two sets of books. We just talked about this in local government. Ron Paul was absolutely right, folks. Perform a full audit of the Fed and do an inventory of unallocated gold bullion now. Knowledge is a powerful weapon, and you're going to have to let the truth set you free. This small scratch of an audit of the Fed, pushed by Dr. Ron Paul, revealed severe infection. As he quickly stitched up, it's healing nicely. But don't disturb it. We need an antibiotic audit of the Fed, and then proceed with truth. See, we do think on the air here that people can handle the truth. Alcoa tried to make the Icelandic people pay and build an aluminum plant there. Iceland said no. The FBI and CIA tried to get over involved in Iceland, going after WikiLeaks. Iceland said no. See, no free market exists where corporations have to be supported by the taxpayers. Iceland turned their banks into educational centers and turned all the doors to the banks into doorstops because they were not willing to put up with the bankers raping and pillaging and plundering. And that's what we've been trying to tell people we really need our own government to do. It's a little too late now that you have the genies out of the bottle and all those other cliches. But we should not have been propping up the bankers. We should not have been giving them their way. But we did. We basically said, oh, we got to bail out the bankers. They're too big to fail. They're too big to fail. But they weren't too big to fail. The bottom line is if you had told them go pound sand, kind of like Iceland had done, we too would be back on our feet now. You see, the loss of income caused by banks is as bad as any world war. And banks' executive directors for financial stability, they know that the public anger, at the banks is justified. They know that it would be astonishing if people were actually asking the big questions about where the hell the finances have gone wrong. But people will just stare with their eyes glazed over at CNBC or Fox Business, and they don't understand what's going on. And the bankers want the crisis to be paid for by your children and your children's children. And most likely it will. But this is the damn same reason that the people should get upset. This is the reason that people should get angry about what the bankers have done. But we've propped them up for so long. So the bankers keep telling us, oh, it's a red alert, it's a red alert. You got to be prepared for banking collapse. Remember that last fall? Except we exposed the fact that it was staged to try to make them back off. You need to get back to work researching the banksters if you don't understand what they're about, exposing the banksters if you do know what they're about. Don't sit around with a bunch of guns just talking about some physical confrontation. We don't want it to go to that. We believe that the pen is mightier than the sword. We believe that the airwaves here on the My View Matters radio network is stronger than the sword. We want you to stand up for the truth. Remember, folks, this is not a game. Get your own voice out there and make sure that they hear you loud and clear when you tell them death to your new world order. Have a good night, folks.
There ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. When I hear that trumpet sound, I'm gonna rise right out of the ground. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. Well, look way down the river, and what do you think I see? I see a band of angels, and they're coming after me. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. Well, look down yonder, Gabriel. Put your feet on the land and sea. But Gabriel, don't you blow your trumpet till you hear from me. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. Ain't no grace can hold my body down. Jesus, meet me in the middle of the air. And if these wings don't fail me, I will meet you anywhere. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. Well, meet me, mother and father. Meet me down the river road. And mama, you know that I'll be there when I check in, my Lord. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!